912 Porsche ran from 1965 to 1969. It was the answer for the consumer who couldn't afford the new 911. It was the 911 style, but in a four-cylinder variation, less expensive, lighter, nimble, and has stood the test of time. This is the story of one such car, which has been in one family since 1966, through all the years and through all the memories. The story of the 912 Porsche.
Okay, we're here at the Peninsula Rooftop Restaurant with my good buddies, Scott Woodward and Conrad. We're here to talk about the 912. A lot of this won't be in the thing, believe me. We're just going to start from the beginning.
Okay.
And we'll be interrupted. It doesn't matter. I'll cut this, so it's no big deal. We'll make it work.
Can you do the background noise? Can you diffuse it?
I'll try my best. I don't have the software for that necessarily.
But he could.
Yeah. Well,
I can EQ it all.
Go on. Okay.
So tell me. So you've already gone over this a million times. So unfortunately, we'll just have to do it again. But I'm just curious. Tell me about the car. Tell me how you came to get it, and tell me again about how your dad went down to get it and he found out about it, about the fact that he was interested in a different Porsche model and how he ended up.
Well, my understanding, because I was pretty much just about born, but he had picked a Speedster and went down with his friend Roger Kennedy to get the car, and it was not a Speedster, it was the new model, the new body edition, and Dad was really sort of upset about it, and before he took possession, Roger and him went to lunch and discussed how this body style would change the next 40 years of Porsche, and it was the new latest design, it was phenomenal. And so after the conversation, Dad went down and took possession of it.
But he didn't want that car, right?
He didn't want that car.
He wanted the 356? The bathtub style?
The bathtub style. A friend of his, who was an art director, had the 356. My uncle Tom had a 356. He had a bunch of friends that had 356s, and that's what he wanted. So by the time it was all done, he was the guy with the new body style. Everyone had the old 356 body style. He had the new one.
But he's a design guy, so...
And he's a design guy.
The design was really important to him. So he didn't necessarily think the 911, which became the 912, really was...
He liked the engine of the 356 rather than the 911, so he wanted something pretty much what he was going to order. He had just bought the house in the Palisades, which was all mid-century, terrazzo floors and everything was mid-century. He had the design company in Santa Monica, and so he was doing all the latest 60s designs all over L.A. This fit the model.
Can you imagine driving a 1960s Porsche in L.A. in the 60s? That must have been something.
Yeah. And then when I was born, they took me back in the hospital. Mom held me, and Dad drove the Porsche. And at that time, we were living in a Richard Neutra apartment in West L.A., which is now historical. So Ray and Charles Eames had lived above us, and John and Tenza had lived to the right, and Orson Welles' mistress had lived catty corner. And so he basically bought it right after the Fiat had taken a dive. He liked the body style of that, but he really had his mind set on the Porsche. So growing up over the years, it was who gets the house and the divorce and who gets the Porsche. And Dad got the Porsche, Mom got the house. And so every weekend, Dad would come pick me up. And at that time, he lived a couple doors down from Malibu Pier. And I remember the sounds, just peep peep, and get in and off for the weekend.
So it's safe to say that the very first car you were ever in was a Porsche.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As a baby, coming
literally
back from the hospital.
Literally. And then it was, so he moved from Santa Monica to Hollywood, and that's when I went to Beverly. And, there were camping trips and there were road trips in this car. And
so he learned to love it after a while. I mean, he didn't like it at first, but then he learned to like it?
he always liked it, but it was just one of those things. It was getting used to, I mean, it was getting used to the new body style, which was
totally new.
Totally new. Yeah. Nothing out there was there. The Jags.
You know, the 911 body style, which was the 912 and the 911, that was only probably 2 years old at the time.
Right. Right, so
no one
is,
really knew what to make of it.
So you had the Spacers, you had the 356, you had the convertibles, and then all of a sudden Porsche comes out with this new, bam, new design, longer, more streamlined, and probably took him getting used to a little bit.
And tell me about the color. The color was a custom color that he wanted?
The color was a charcoal.
Should we order?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. All right, so we were talking about the kind of the beginning of getting the car and your dad picking it up. You went down to Long Beach, you picked it up, and essentially, tell me about the memories as a kid. He picked you up in it, and what did you know it was a Porsche? Did it have any kind of brand appeal at the time? Did you think it was cool?
That's the one story I was going to tell you that I'm going to tape. So. In the studio across from LACMA, where I pretty much grew up, and they had a friend, Dave Williamson, who had a brand new black 911. And so it was always this 912 and this 911 parked there. And I'm maybe just learning to talk. And one of the stories is I was walking around the office going, Porsche, 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 Porsche. And pretty soon, all these people that Dad had hired are like combing the office. What's he seen? What's he seen? And Dave Williams, who was also a top designer, on his door had all these adverts that he had done and all that. And at the very, very top of the door was this little 1-inch by 1-inch photo of a Porsche that I had plucked out. And that was the Porsche, Porsche, Porsche. So it was always, I always knew what they were. It was always in the blood. And you know, over the years, we had the Siberian Husky, and we would sit in the back in each seat. And there were times when he wasn't there, and I would play my Porsche cars. I had Porsche cars. I've got a little white Porsche about 8 inches in length, you know, about 6 inches wide that, yeah, it was always Porsche toys. So I would always have those on the down back seat in the parking lot, and I'm sitting in the back seat behind Mom or Dad. And then there was camping trips, and Dad went out and got the luggage rack for the Porsche so we could go down to Baja, and he taught me how to drive down there.
All right, so that's a good... All right, so we want to pick up... with the story about how you learned how to drive a stick in the 912, essentially on the mountain roads in Mexico. So explain how you ended up going down there. You had a family place down there.
We used to go down to San Felipe when it was a little fishing village before the resort it became and before the hotels that they built. So there was a little place just south of San Felipe called Percival. And this is an all-day trip. I mean, this is an eight-hour trip. And we would drive down there. We'd stop in San Felipe. There was a guy called the Clam Man. And he made clam soup and all that. We'd pull in, drive the Porsche all the way down there. And we'd get down to the Clam Man and have a bowl of clam chowder, Mexican style. And then we'd hit the dirt road all the way to Percival. And Percival was a campsite where the tide would go out several miles, expose all the rocks and everything, and then come back in. So it was, we go down during the summer when no one was there. It'd be hot, 110, and we'd drive the Porsche out on the dirt roads, on the sandy dirt roads, and no one around, so Dad thought it was an ample opportunity to teach me how to drive this thing. And we'd go down the roads and then miles and miles and miles of just driving the Porsche and shifting and downshifting and brake, stop, don't ride the clutch, that kind of thing. Pretty much what I did with my son in Scottsdale in the 911. But yeah, no, we'd get down there and then it would be camping, go fishing, you know, catch crabs and then come back and be another driving lesson.
That's like a dream to be able to to ride a Porsche down there.
And then Dad would drive, and there was always a linkage problem with the accelerator. So he would drive, and all of a sudden the pedal would go down to the ground, and we would dig this hole in the sand so he could, we didn't have the jack, everything was packed. So we'd dig a hole underneath the back of the car, like a little pit, and he'd slide back there and re-hook up the linkage and put a wire tie on it, and we'd drive another 10 miles or 20 miles till that popped off. But
did your dad know how to work on cars?
Not really, no.
How did you learn how to work on cars?
It was just sort of a natural. With the Porsche came the VW thing when I went to Beverly. In between all that, side job was taking cars down to Tijuana, getting them fixed, dropping one off and picking up another and driving it back.
Cool.
So by the time I was about 23, I must have had about 30 VWs.
And you knew from you learned from the guys down in Tijuana?
No, just self-taught, pretty much. I mean, it was, all I could say is hanging around the Porsche mechanic, like Sepp Motors out in Santa Monica, just being around. But on the most part, it was, I was always taking things apart, always putting them together, building go-karts. I've rebuilt plenty of VW motors, so it was always a hands-on thing. What scared me when I bought the 911, the 78, was I couldn't work on it. But the 66, I could work on all day long, pull the motor out and rebuild it and repaint it.
How similar was the 912 engine to the VWs that you were used to?
Oh, it's really, I mean, it was a three-part case versus a two-part case. So you had the front part of the 912 motor come off, and then you split the case. Whereas the VW, you just split the case. So the timing cover, everything was on the front. But it was a better designed engine by far, because the heating and the cooling and the performance with it. And when I built the bus, I had a 67 VW bus, I went Type 4. Not the regular VW case, but I went with a 914 Porsche motor and built that up. So that was all raced out, and that was a 2.0 motor that we built to 3.0, I think, and did the upright kit, and that bus would, God, we'd go, 70 miles an hour uphill in a full camper bus.
That's awesome.
Porsche motor. That was the one that was in the magazine that went around
Europe. Oh, really?
Europe. Yeah. So.
So you've got an interesting story about how you needed to find a mechanic. Back in the day, your father needed a mechanic, and he found an interesting mechanic in town. And tell me about that. How that worked out?
Okay, well, I'll tell you a little bit more in depth on the one story. So Sepp Motors, Porsche Motors, down in Santa Monica, I think off of Fifth, not there anymore. But the German mechanic that owned it was, you know, watching Hitler movies and all this kind of crazy stuff. Very, very German. And when Mom and Dad divorced, Seth tried to date my mom. And, you know, Dad was still going, getting his Porsche repaired at Seth's. And so he caught wind that this was happening, and he got ticked off, and I'm not going back there to hell with this guy. Mom never went out with him, but just the thought of it. So he had talked to several of his friends, and I don't know, the word came by about this little black guy, Speedy, that at that time in the 80s, you know, they were ripping off these Porsches and chopping them up and interchanging the parts and the motors, and you had body kits like the GTIs and flares, and doing slant noses came out, and it was just, you know, piecemeal Porsches from stolen parts. So Speedy had a reputation for, they would drive around from South Compton, drive around, look, scout for Porsches, and they would pull behind in a pickup, and he would, two guys would jack it up, and he'd unbolt this thing in a matter of minutes, and they would lift it up and put it in the back of the truck and gone. So this was, I don't know, I'm sure Dad probably thought, well, this guy could do it, he's familiar with it. So we went down there, and one of the Dad's workers followed us down, and we went down to Compton, basically, and parked the car, and this little guy came out from a garage out of an alley, looked at, little black guy, rough, and next thing you know, he's jacked it up, and he's pulled that motor out, and we're going over, literally in 10, 15 minutes, the motor's in the shop on an engine stand, going over what needs to be done, valve covers are popped off, and we leave the car.
Amazing.
And then we go back, and then a matter of probably a couple weeks, we go back and the Porsche is put back together with who knows what parts, but it's put back together. And Dad, I remember Dad, we got the car and we got in it, and he goes, "Wow, this is like the best it's ever run. This is just," and it was a bullet. So I don't know what he did. But
what was the guy's name?
Speedy. That's all we knew. So, you know, and then Dad, you know, drove it everywhere. It was a daily driver. So it was, hold on.
So this car of yours, it's been in the family since 1966? 67?
65, maybe.
And you've had it all this time. And it's a one-owner car, essentially. You and your dad, and now your son will take it over. So it's a one-family car.
Right.
Since day one.
Day one.
Which is amazing. However, you did have a lapse in ownership that was
a mishap.
Unintentional. And tell me exactly how that happened and what happened.
Okay. So I used to joyride the Porsche. Dad would go out to the club scene, he was single, and I had an extra key made, and when he'd come back a little intoxicated and go to bed, it was my time to take it out. And I'd chalk where the tires were, I'd disconnect the speedometer. I had extra gas in the car, in the garage, in a tank, because I had scooters. So I left that unmixed. That was to top up if I drove excessively. And I'd mark with a piece of masking tape where the gas gauge was. So I dialed this in. And so,
that's impressive.
Oh, it was. So I would drive most of the time to go see a girlfriend, Eagle Rock, and drive all the way.
That's a hike.
That's a big hike.
Yeah.
And drive all the way to Eagle Rock, see her, leave early in the morning, come back, juice the car up, wheel it in, hook everything back up, take water and pour it on the garage, and it would dry and the chalk marks would be gone. And I'd climb through the window in the apartment in Beverly Hills, take a shower, walk out, go, "See you later, I'm off to school," and I'd go to Beverly. So I did this hundreds of times. Take it out on Sunset Strip, take it with Richard, we'd go joyriding on the strip, anywhere I could take it when I knew I wasn't gonna get caught. And there were several times that were close, you know, there, majorly several times where Dad's going one direction, I'm going the other direction, the race says he's going to go in front, I'm going in back, and then he'll walk around and see if I'm working on a car or something. "Hey, how's it going?" And the engine is still hot.
Yeah.
Okay. So he goes to Florida for, you know, 4 days. And it's Rambo First Blood came out at the Avco in West LA. And I thought, I'm not driving a scooter when it's cold, I'll take the Porsche. So I do my normal, chalk the tires and take the gauge and disconnect the speedometer. And I go to Hughes Market off Doheny and Beverly, and I pick up a bunch of munchies. And I drive all the way to Palisades, pick up a friend of mine, Mark. And we drive all the way back to West LA. And we park the car down one of the side streets, and we walk up to the Avco. We're waiting in line with all these other people to see Rambo, and we're talking, and I'm facing the street. And as he's facing the street, and as we're talking, his look follows the car driving by. He goes, "Boy, that looks a lot like your dad's Porsche." And I glanced over, and I go, "Yeah, huh, funny. It was the Porsche. Somebody had ripped it off." So after the movie would come out, we're all pumped up. Rambo is a great movie, all right, yo, you know, how you doing? And we walked down a side street, and I'm like, well, maybe I parked on the next street. And we walked down the next street, and maybe it was the next street. I wasn't paying too much attention. We walked down the next street. And so we juggled streets, walking down each street for the next 2 hours, trying to find a stolen car.
Oh, that's the worst.
So I go to the payphone, I call mom up, and I told her the story, and she's like, I go, maybe it's towed. Yeah, maybe it's towed. I'll call the towing companies. So I called the towing companies, and no car. And I am petrified. Mom goes, well, you gotta tell your dad. So Mark's like, well, how am I gonna get home? And I'm probably said something like, take the RTD, I don't care. I'm screwed, my life is over. Cause I was just.
Yeah, that's devastating.
So I go home and I kick it around. And I call him up. According to dad, he filled in some blanks. So I called him twice. Once I called him, I said, hey, how's the trip going? That's good. Okay, well, when are you coming home? In a couple days. Okay, I'll see you when you get home. And I hang up and I call back. I didn't know I did this, but I called back. And he goes, what happened to the car? And his second wife, I don't know, had some car insurance problems, and they had 21st century insurance, and that canceled his insurance, so he didn't have full coverage on this car. So I told him what happened. He goes, I will be back in 3 days. You stay there. Don't go anywhere. Don't do anything. Just go to school. I'll be back.
Ooh.
And
you knew
when I
pissed.
Went back to the reunion, the 30-year reunion, people were coming up to me going, I remember something happened to a car, and you were just like, my life is over. It's just absolutely over.
Yeah.
Now, I worked at an ice cream store off of Robertson and Melrose for $2.35 an hour.
So you knew that it might take some time to repay your debt.
So I'm in this panic, and I'm there. I do remember this.
We worked at an ice cream store together for
for
an afternoon, I think.
Yeah. And
that's another story.
And Dad had these tweed couches with a George Nelson oval table, all this mid-century stuff in this 40s Beverly Hills apartment, second floor, with the corridor with the steps, and that echoed everything. So I'm sitting there, just panicked. And I can remember it right now, just absolutely in panic. And I hear the car, the door keys jingle, and each step echoing up this corridor, going, oh God, here it comes. And the door opening, and he comes in, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at him.
It's like Darth Vader showing
up. And he doesn't
up.
Say a thing. He doesn't do anything. He walks over to his IBM typewriter. I'm like, hit me, do something.
Yeah.
Right. A physical hit would have been better.
Did he look totally disappointed in his face, or?
Dad was always very intimidating. You just did not want to mess with Dad.
Yeah.
And so it was like I saw him walk in, wasn't going to start the conversation, but I'm there. He sees I'm there. I'll let him make the first move. Not because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. So he goes over to a typewriter. All I hear is on his. Electra IBM typewriter, which I still have too.
Of course.
And so I hear the paper come out, and he comes over and he sits down and he lays it down with a pen. Sign it. Okay, he said something. So here comes my cockiness. So I start to read it. He goes, no, sign it. I go, I don't sign anything unless I read it. Sign it. And next thing you know,
he's actually said that to him.
Oh yeah.
After he just had his car stolen.
Oh yeah.
He said, "I'm not going to sign anything until I read
it." No, I mouth off the cops. It didn't bother me any. So I always challenge authority. So I sign it and I read it after, and I owe $16,000 for a 1966 912 Porsche.
You know how much those go for now?
Oh yeah. And I remember just, oh God, I make $2.35 an hour. Life is over.
Yeah.
It's over. It's done.
Yeah.
So that's about roughly the time that I shaved a lot of my hair off and dyed it.
Yeah.
And then went down. I had a girlfriend in Huntington Beach, so I went to go sleep under the pier in Huntington Beach in an ivy patch. and get woken up with sprinklers every morning because her mom wouldn't allow me in the apartment. And I just like, there's no point. There's no point.
Your life is over.
It's over. Yeah. And so after about a month and a half, 2 months, I came back. Had to dye whatever's left brown. Because Dad flipped out when I dyed my hair burgundy. He pretty much kicked me out when I dyed it burgundy. He goes, dye it back or get the hell out. So I had to go to my mom's house and she dyed it back. And then...
Well, you're really a mess at this point, huh?
Oh, yeah. Pierce
no money.
And the whole nine thing. And well, Richard and I went down to Beverly Center and paid $19.99 for an ear piercing with a gun. He got one and I got the other. And his father flipped out and mine flipped out. And so anyway, I'm like sort of lost in this whole mess. And I thought, well, I don't remember how much real actual time went by, but probably 4 or 5 months. And I'm going to school, I'll get my yearbook signed. And been there for a constant ditch. And I drive by where the Beverly Hills Farmers Market is now, Little Santa Monica. And I come to a stop sign on my scooter, and I look to the right, and there's a car at the meter. The Porsche is sitting at the meter. Now, there were two things on this Porsche that were different than any other Porsche. One, the back bumper, he had a double grill on the back bumper, a top bar and a bottom bar with a license plate in the middle. And the second one was, Dad carpeted the inside of the Porsche with house carpet. At some point, the old carpet rotted out and he took a low shag house carpet and carpeted the deck behind, right where the rear window is.
With the house carpet.
With the house carpet. Normally it's vinyl. And I'm looking at this because it was cream. And I'm going, and I'm looking in the car going, oh my God, this is a car. And I had always thought I would find a piece because cars were being, Porsches were being chopped left and right.
Yeah.
I go to swap meet, I'll find a door, I'll find something of this car. But there was the car. So I zipped over to the Beverly Hills police station before they remodeled. And they were starting to. And I drove my scooter into where the squad cars were. And I ran inside and I got escorted out. Typical Scott fashion. And I said, look, my dad's Porsche is sitting in this meter. You got to hurry up before somebody comes and takes it away. And this detective came out and we jogged around the corner and they posed, he checked it out and they had the Porsche expert there. They had a license plate on the Porsche. He had the Porsche expert come over from the police station because it's registered as a 68. It's not a 68, it's a 66. And so they pose as construction workers on this one wall they're building having lunch. And this woman comes down, walks down the sidewalk.
And police officers are going undercover?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right then and there.
Wow.
Right then and there. And the detective is there. And this woman comes out. And apparently, he was trying to nail her for grand theft auto. But she got off on a technicality, and here she comes walking down the street, and she walks into the street and puts the key in the Porsche, opens the door, sits in it, and the cops go over there and arrest her. So the investigator, the detective, is like, we got her, and we're dancing in the street. And I don't know why, but wow. that's what it was. But he was so tickled to nail her. After
so
she
they
just
had
got off.
Wanted her before?
They wanted her before. She was in court. She just got off. And it was the detective that I told, this is my dad's car, and she put the key in it. So he nailed her.
Wow.
So when they opened up the car, the cops, all of them were there. The hoods were open. The engines were open. They're checking all the numbers. And I remember specifically the Porsche guy going, well, in a 68 Porsche, there's a little tool kit behind the door near the rear wheel. Something of that sort. I never knew it. But that's one of the clues he distinguished. It was not a 68.
Yeah.
And apparently they had taken tags off a 68 from the wrecking yard and registered as a 68. And they were 2 days away from painting it. So when they opened up the doors, all the body work, they had smashed it and they had fixed it with spot putty, and they're getting ready to sand it and paint it. They open up the glove box, and my dad had his JPL NASA name tag still in the glove box. Her lunch, when I look at the photos, because I still have the photos, her lunch is still on the passenger seat. And do you remember in my scooter I had air horns?
Yeah.
I got those air horns because they hooked up air horns to the 912. So when they popped the hood, when they blared the horn on, the air horns came on.
I see.
So I took those for my scooter. I got something good out of it, right? So I put those on my scooter, and I remember being just absolutely, obviously I didn't go to school.
How much time elapsed between when it was stolen and when you found
it? I want to say 4 or 5 months.
4 or 5 months.
Yeah. And so I zip back to the house.
4 or 5 months of just depression
just
and
despair. Just depression, like it's over.
Yeah.
And then went back to the house, and Dad came home. By that time, he had bought a Cadillac Seville.
Yeah.
I had bought a 66 Buick station wagon painted army green for $200. Yeah. He didn't know.
Yeah.
And so we always drove around, went down to Jan's and all that in the Cadillac Seville. And he came home, and Dad, sit down. And I'm fine. I remember that too. Dad, no, seriously, I have a lot of really important. You need to sit down. You need to take a seat. I'm fine, Scott. Yeah,
this is my troubled son.
I'm yeah. fine. And yeah. I go, I found the Porsche. And he's like, what? And I go, I found the Porsche. Here's the detective's car, which I sent you. I yeah. still have. And he called up, and all I could remember, very narcissistic. Well, they wanted $600 to take it out. Maybe I'll just leave it there. I don't need it anymore. And I begged him. I go, no. I found it. I want this car. You got to get this car, Dad. This is your car. I found it.
Yeah.
Whether it be reverse psychology of all just rub it into Scott's nose.
Yeah.
Or whether he really didn't want the car. And so we went down and got the car and came back to Maples off of Beverly. And he took pictures almost immediately, and in the pictures I'm there, 17 years old. So I found the police report.
Those are the pictures that you sent me?
Those are the pictures
of when it was recovered?
It was recovered.
I see.
And so here I am, 17. It's November 7th, 1982.
So it was all prime for to be painted. That's why it's right. got those spots on
right.
it and stuff?
Okay. So that's exactly how we got it back. That's exactly how they drove it around. That's exactly how I found it. And so he parked it in the garage with my contract changing from repair to or from replace to repair.
A much better position for you.
Oh yeah, so it sat there and he had it. We didn't know if we were going to stay on Maple because coming close next year I'd be graduating. And he had his design business at the Pantages, Rodney Pantages' old office. So the car was registered that entire time to the Pantages' office.
Right.
So, you know, here it is. Everything gets notified there. Insurance is run. Everything ran off the Pantages. So it sat. Dad put it in the garage and it sat. And it was one of those things. I never went in that garage. Didn't want to reopen that wound or salt, so I just did my own thing. Then after graduation, moved to Woodland Hills and brought the car, and he decided, well, I'll fix it up. And my contract changed to repair, so he wanted to paint it white. And at that time, 92, it sat the entire time. 92 was I was going to move to Scottsdale. The Rodney King riots had happened and all that kind of, I just
right.
wanted to get out
yeah.
of here. So a friend of mine goes, well, let's go out before you leave, the day you leave, and we got drunk off peppermint schnapps. So the next day I had to put a Porsche motor in with a schnapps hangover.
Oh, that sounds
which
dreadful.
Was an all-day process. And I remember getting in, driving it up and down the street near the sushi place, Something's Fishy in
yeah.
Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
And it worked like a charm. And I go, here, it works like a charm. And I packed my truck up and I took off. And then Dad would drive it back and forth. And eventually, he fried the motor on it and sat in my backyard. Conrad was playing with all the cars I had in back, the 57 Chrysler 300, a boat, and the Porsche. And my ex-wife was like, well, is your dad going to get this car out of here? You know, we've got a little one. And I go, Dad, what do you want to do with the car? and he goes, well, I'll give it to you. So he signed over the true pink slip.
What year was that?
I want to say it was 2000.
2000.
And
it was 18 years ago already.
And so I end up getting a pink slip, and the lady, when I went to register it, goes, oh, let me just put a hole in this to invalidate it. You want to hang on to this. So I still have the actual pink slip.
Wow, that's cool.
So,
all right, so where's, tell me about the plans you've got currently. What's the status of the car, and what are you looking to do with it? And well, tell me about your plans for keeping it in the family, or what does this become to you, this car?
Well, you know, I went through a pretty brutal divorce. I had 911, a bunch of hot rods, some VW bus. I had about 12 different pretty nice cars. I signed the Porsche back to my father during this process. It was his car. And I wasn't about to lose his car again. So after the divorce, he signed it back to me a couple of years later. And so the plan was, I had pulled the motor out and taken it to the machine shop to get rebuilt in hopes that I would put it back in and I would be able to take Dad out to breakfast on Sundays in his original car.
Wow.
Down to the Valley Ho, which is mid-century. And he likes going to the Valley Ho because all the George Nelson, Errol Saarinen, Charles Eames, all the mid-century designers are all within the architecture of the Valley Ho. And so here we are almost full circle going, this would be great to pull in. All the waiters know us, all the valet parkers know us. And here to drive up with Dad in his original Porsche from that era would be phenomenal. I think that would just
Is that what you're going to do?
So that's the plan. So the Porsche motor is
And how old
done.
Is your dad now?
Dad is 86.
86.
And Mom is 86. Yeah. And so, you know, the bonus would be is to take Mom out.
Yeah.
And do the same thing. Yeah. But it is, you know, Dad sees his Porsche every day in the garage. He walks up there and gives it a little pat and goes, when are you going to do this? You know, there's a spot here. You need to clean that. He's still on me about it. The stolen car story always comes up. But the plan is to restore the car, to enjoy it, rejoin the PCA, which I was once at. I took the car to the PCA several times, and people in Arizona flipped with the photographs of and everything, and took Conrad there. And so is restore it, and then I'll enjoy it and take it to events or, you know, the 356 or 912 meets, and it'll get passed along to my son.
What is it, do you think you're going to do this? What's your deadline of getting this thing back on the road?
I'm hoping by fall.
Of this year?
Of this year. We're in June now.
We'll have to do another one of these and talk about the experience it will be to do these things, to take your mom and dad out on this thing.
What I will do is I will film what I'm going to do to the car. I document everything. So, even in work. And so I'll document it. I'll have photos of Mom and Dad as I'm doing it.
Perfect.
And then when I do the maiden voyage, I'll film it and, you know, maybe have you come out and...
That's awesome.
You know, the whole bit. Yeah. But I think for Dad, because he's always loved the car, and it is his baby. I mean, he is so honest. He walks by to his apartment in the backyard, and he's like, I'm waiting.
So, but he's played it down over the years that he didn't like it as much as he actually really did love it, right? Is that the deal?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, it was one of those things. It's like design. You know, the more simple designs, the better it is. And this modern day now is, you disguise it, you add to it, you accessorize it, you know, you think you're making it better. And when you look at the new generation now versus guys like Eames or Dad or Nelson or any of the mid-century. It was one guy, a very simplistic design, simple, clean, elegant lines, and you were there.
And efficient.
And the design had to have a purpose, and the purpose had to have a design. And so that has sort of transpired through, and growing up with that, especially with the car and everything else, is that all his design buddies had Porsches. I mean, it was...
How funny.
It was always... it was always that click, and I remember, you know, as a little kid, you'd drive down the street and Porsches would flash their headlights, and you felt like you were in this private little club.
I still get that today driving my car.
And no other car pulls that, not even VW.
The only other community like that I'm aware of is motorcycles. Right. You know,
motorcycle. But it was. You drive down PCH, and then you flash the lights, and you boom.
Yeah.
And
the police officers flash their lights at me, but that's different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for taking the time today to tell us about your 912, the family car. And look forward to seeing it on the road.
I like the little convertible Fiat.
Right.
But I was pushed on the... brake, and it broke.
In the Fiat.
So I had to get another car.
Right.
And I wasn't going to get another Fiat, although I liked the design and the style. And I remembered Tom's car, Tom Darling's car, and I thought, this I would like, so I'll order that.
So you ordered the Porsche?
Yeah.
And you wanted his model?
I wanted what I remembered Tom's to be, and that's what I thought I ordered. And then when we got down to the you know, where the shipment came
in San Pedro.
In San Pedro, we got to the car. I said, this isn't the car I ordered. And I was with Kennedy. And come on, Tom, you're not talking about. I said, this isn't the car I ordered. And he said, Roger said, it's a great looking car, Tom. And I said, I don't know. I don't know whether I'll get used to it or not. It's not what I ordered.
Now, did you pick the color? Did they at least get the color right?
Oh, they got the color right, yeah.
The charcoal?
Yeah. It's a color I liked very much, a kind of neutral, and it, in those days I liked the charcoal carpets and the fireplace and
hapsack suits,
and the hapsack suits were all gray and dark gray and light gray, and I liked the neutrals.
Right. So does that reflect with the house, the black and white?
Yeah. I didn't get to pick it in the house, but I enjoyed it. The house had a lot of things that I liked about it. The white terrazzo floor and the volcanic ash on the fireplace.
So the Porsche just sort of fit into this whole...
The gray scheming. Yeah. The sling sofa was black and silver.
The Eames chair.
The Eames chair was, black and brown, brown wood.
The Herman Miller chairs were...
Well, they were gray, too.
So why not just get a gray Porsche?
I guess that's the way it goes.
You enjoyed driving it?
Sure. It was... I think when I started to drive, it was kind of tricky to drive. You know, getting the...
The
shifting It'd be interesting if you ever get the engine in again to drive it and see what it really drives like and to remember it.
Right.
I don't remember the kinetics of it. Exactly what you do and how you do it anymore.
Oh, it would probably just come right back like second nature.
Well, probably it's probably locked in my brain somewhere if the brain is still there. We'll see.
What was the first car? It was the first car I drove.
Yeah.
That's what I learned on. So I remember that you had to bring it all the way and put it on your, get it to your knee and bring it down. And I remember you taking me on La Cienega, right at Sunset Strip, the steepest hill in Hollywood, to drive.
Well, I may have done that to challenge you to to get it right and to get it in gear and let the clutch out properly. There was always a tendency to let the clutch out too slowly.
Ride it.
And that may have been the problem that I was trying to correct. I don't remember it in particular, but you do.
Oh, I do, yeah. Don't ride the clutch. And I'm riding the clutch, and you smell clutch all the way up La Cienega and Strip. And then I found out a lot of friends from Beverly, their parents took them on that exact spot to learn to drive. Oh, yeah, that seems to be the passing of amateur driver to, okay, now I know my kid can drive because I took him up La Cienega and Sunset Strip, that steep part. But, yeah, no, I remember driving the 912. And the stick shift. That's why I taught Conrad on my 911. That was his first car to drive. Mm-hmm.